This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Hey Chicago, I'm Mariah Wolfel in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around to the very end of the episode to get a rundown of the latest news. But first, the issue of sub-minimum wage has returned to the Chicago City Council. Tipped workers have been seeing an increase in their wages over the past couple of years. The One Fair Wage Ordinance was passed by alders in 2023 and aimed to phase out the sub-minimum wage for tipped workers over a five-year period. But last week, city lawmakers voted to freeze the phase-out. This move has caused a stir in the service industry, with many feeling divided about the implications of eradicating sub-minimum wage. At the table to share these perspectives, Sam Toya, president of the Illinois Restaurant Association, and Molly Pesci, a restaurant worker and organizer with CHAD. That's the Chicago Hospitality Accountability and Advocacy Database. CHAD is part of One Fair Wage, a national organization of restaurant workers and owners who are aiming to end sub-minimum wage across the country. I started by asking both of them, why did city council members reverse course? Here's Molly.
I think as we head into an election year next year for our alder people, they're afraid. But for us, for any person who's worked on a tip wage, what I have to remind them is that this is not just about business sustainability. This is quite literally a safety issue for workers. The rates of sexual harassment that women workers face because they have to work on a tipped wage, they have to make their wages based on the whims of customers and their perception of their interaction. It exposes them to rampant sexual harassment and discrimination. Something like 70% or more of tip workers have experienced this across their career. And when you look at Chicago statistics, by and large, tip workers are Black, Brown, and immigrant women who are right now, their wages were just frozen at 76% of an actual minimum wage. And it's Women's History Month right now. This is an equal pay issue.
And that's certainly one of the arguments we hear from proponents of increasing these wages. Sam, jump in here. Why do you think council members are reversing course now?
First off, there's a lot of misinformation. We got to be perfectly clear and honest to get started. We have always and will always be opposed to elimination of tip credit because everyone in the city of Chicago must already make the minimum wage. By law, no one can make less than the minimum wage. The average wage is roughly $28 per hour, and we know it is far higher for others. There's a 24% tip credit right now of $3.98, so the tip worker makes $12.62. As I just mentioned, the average server makes close to $12.62 an hour. And if you do away with the tip credit wage, you know, a lot of restaurants will go to surcharge. What people are also missing is a lot of servers like tips, right? Because the big, beautiful bill, they don't have to pay no tax on tips for the first $25,000. And we do know that over 496 restaurants closed in the first half of 2025 alone. All you have to do, your eyes do not lie, is look up and down our commercial streets from 79th Street to 53rd Street to Lincoln Avenue to Western to Lawrence Avenue, see all the empty storefronts. Before the pandemic, in December 2019, there was over 130,200 people that worked in full service restaurants. December 2025, there's 122,400, 7,800 fewer jobs. If the mayor vetoes this, you'll see less jobs and less opportunities and more empty storefronts.
Sam, this initial ordinance raising wages for tipped workers came after a compromise between you and the mayor, your group and the mayor's office. What's changed?
No, it was never a compromise. I always knew they had the votes there. We were very happy to get 5 years instead of 2 or 3 years. So, again, we've also seen that we've done a poll that 86% of tip workers believe they will earn less if the tip credit is eliminated because people, restaurant owner operators, are shrinking their hours. A lot of restaurants used to be open at 12 o'clock. Now they're open at 10 o'clock. They've shrunk their menus. What's going on out here is that, sure, they're not taking home as much because they're not getting as many hours. So they're getting less hours. That means they're getting less tips because in the restaurant industry, there's only two things you can control is your labor cost and your product cost. And as labor cost goes up, if you had 5 servers, now you have 3 servers. You had 2 busboys, now you have 1 busboy, because all you can do is control your labor cost. And again, the first half of 2025 alone, we saw over 496 restaurants close.
So that's what you're hearing from restaurant owners. Molly, what are you hearing from employees about how this ordinance has affected them over the past few years and their concerns about ending this phased in increase of their wages?
Sure. So I'll start with an anecdote from my teammate, Gina, who is here with me today in the studio. She's been working as a tipped worker in this industry since she was 17. That's 14 years of experience. And she said once this was passed for the first time, she no longer had to debate every month if she could afford her mother's medicine or rent. That is the impact this is having. And when we talk about numbers, you know, Sam, you're asserting that it's by law workers must make the full minimum and that businesses have to make that up if they don't make that with their tips. But in practice, we know that the law doesn't necessarily equate to what is going on. And the fact of the matter is, wage theft is rampant in this industry, whether it's managers in a tip pool or you're being asked to start work before you clock in. And frankly, Sam, that's something you're familiar with, because from what I know, your family's restaurant, Leona's, the 11 locations y'all had, you had to settle a wage theft lawsuit in 2015. You know this is a reality.
Sam, I want to let you jump in here.
2015, I was out of the business in 2015. I've been out of the business since 2012, so I'm not sure what you're talking about. But again, by law, everyone needs to be out of, you have to make the minimum wage. If there's bad actors and actresses out there, let's go after them. Have BACP, Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, go after these bad actors and actresses. You know, we should, you know, definitely make sure that all servers know they have to make the minimum wage.
Sam, I want to ask, so if restaurant owners are struggling under the rising costs of food, of taxes, of all these cost of living increases that we're seeing, is it fair to also assume that their workers are facing those same financial costs? And why is the answer here to reduce their wages?
Again, by law, everyone needs to make the minimum wage. The average server here in the state of Illinois makes close to $29 an hour. We do know that 87% of tip employees believe the current system works and does not need to be changed. You'll see a lot of restaurants, you know, if you do away with the tip credit wage, go to surcharge. Servers like to, especially with the new big, beautiful bill passed, they do not have to pay taxes on tips up to $25,000. We saw Mayor Bowser in Washington, D.C. She, was going to eliminate tip credit, and she was doing it. Then she saw that there was over 3,700 jobs were lost in D.C. with a lot of empty storefronts. And then what she did was reverse the elimination of the tip credit wage. If the mayor vetoes it, we'll see less jobs and less opportunities and more empty storefronts. Again, your eyes do not lie. Just look up and down our commercial corridors and you'll see all the empty storefronts.
Molly, you know, this concern that Sam's raising in from Alders is not baseless. You know, restaurants are struggling in Chicago and have closed or moved outside of the city. How are workers confronting this choice between keeping a lower wage job for maybe longer term because the business sticks around longer versus, you know, getting a wage increase and then, you know, the business being at risk of closing down in 3 to 6 to 9 months?
Well, first, we should talk about what retention rate looks like in an industry with a subminimum wage, because realistically, 75% of workers are leaving a job within a year, and a large part of that is due to unstable wages and wage theft, let alone the sexual harassment and discrimination facing many, many Black, Brown, and women workers. And I do want to respond to a couple of things that Sam said. To your point about the average server in Illinois making $29 an hour, I want to ask where you got that number, because a huge reason people struggle is because you might make good money in summer, patio season, but for the rest of the year when it's cold, and that is a good chunk of the year here in Chicago, your wages are not stable. You can make less than 50% of those summer wages for half of the year. And considering that this industry has the largest share of single mothers of any private sector, what you are advocating for is wage instability and a pay cut for those single mothers in this industry that are trying to support their families. And so you also quoted the Business Affairs and Consumer Protection, the city's department, and their data shows that business license renewals in this sector are up. They're on par or higher than pre-pandemic numbers. And so I am not denying that restaurants are struggling, but your assertion that it is purely because workers are getting a dollar or two raise a year, which is the only raise they get, you're not giving the whole picture. You mentioned product costs. That is food costs. That is also grocery costs for those workers. Product costs are astronomical right now. Why doesn't the Illinois Restaurant Association work with the city to develop a robust urban farm program that can provide produce at a cheaper price for local independent restaurants? Why aren't you lobbying for rent subsidies for these small mom and pop single location restaurants? Why aren't you lobbying for to reduce the payroll tax at the state level? There are many solutions here to address the fact that restaurants are struggling, and it does not have to come with a sacrifice of worker wages, women's worker wages.
Sam, I want to pull out a question there, which is, what data does the Illinois Restaurant Association rely on to track the growth or, you know, the shrinking of restaurants in the city of Chicago?
So obviously we got the full service restaurant numbers by, you know, the Chicagoland market, you know, because it kind of goes. So those are the, you know, Chicago markets where we do know that full service restaurant employees are down by 7,800 fewer jobs. We do surveys. We do, you know, get numbers from BACP. You know, it was mentioned that it was up, but 17% of restaurants did not renew their license. That's one out of five restaurants did not renew their license. That's 20%. Again, the restaurant industry is a very tough industry. I used to say it was an industry of nickels and dimes. Now it's an industry of pennies and nickels. We're seeing more and more restaurants go out of business. Like I mentioned, 496 restaurants went out the first half alone. Even the mayor admitted that up to 20% of restaurants did not renew their licenses. That's why we're seeing so many empty storefronts up and down our commercial corridors. Again, it is tough. It is a tough industry. And the only two things you can control is product cost and labor costs. And absolutely, product cost is up everywhere, especially with tariffs and you know, food prices going up. But labor cost is even up higher. It's up 35% in the last few years. And that's why you're seeing more independent restaurants close. Chicago is a very independent restaurant town. It's not a chain restaurant town like Tampa or Houston. So I worry about our independent restaurants from Portage Park to Rogers Park to Little Village to Chatham. These are the restaurants that I'm worrying about. And yes, I would love to come to the table and figure out other ways we could help our independent restaurants, be it in Springfield or wherever. We did work on, you know, grants, you know, for our independent restaurants, and, you know, we'll keep working on that. But we also know, because of the tip credit wage being, you know, out there, 79% cut restaurants cut their employee hours and 72% reduced their numbers of employees. That's a fact.
And okay. That's from your lobby poll that you did. Because when I looked at the BACP numbers in 2022, the renewal rate was lower than it was in 2025. And that's before the ordinance passed. And for the record, non-renewal is not the same as a closure. Those are different data points. Non-renewal frequently means that the business owner just forgot to file their license renewal on time. The data point you want to look at is cancellations. And those are on par with what they have been over the past five plus years. So wherever you're pulling your data from, I suggest you look at the actual city data.
Okay, let's move on to what this veto will mean. At a press conference last week, Mayor Brandon Johnson shared his frustration and disappointment because of the city council's vote. He said that stripping wages from tipped workers, especially Black and Brown women who are overrepresented in tipped and low-wage jobs, is, quote, shameful. Let's take a listen.
You had Juliana Stratton calling for $25 an hour at the federal level. And one, and people who are ostensibly Democrats said that Black women and Brown women who barely make $12 an hour, not for y'all. There's like a real disconnect that's going on in city council right now. It's like an alt universe. The entire world is calling for affordability and raising wages. And this city council just took raises away from Black and Brown women.
You know, I want to talk about the group of aldermen who voted to freeze these tipped wages. They are the same group that took control of the city's budget process that prevented Mayor Johnson from implementing a new head tax on corporations, which I know the Restaurant Association also opposed. You know, I just want to talk politics. Do either of you want to weigh in here on what the motivations are? Is this more about opposing Johnson than it is about policy? Sam, we'll start with you.
No, I think, you know, a lot of alders are worried about the empty storefronts they have up and down their commercial corridors. I think they're worried about, job numbers going down. They saw that over 496 restaurants closed in the first half of 2025. They see restaurants hours closing. You know, they used to be open to midnight. Now they're closing at 10. They see they're cutting back on their team members. So I really think it has to do with all the empty storefronts, because your eyes don't lie. And if you're an alder, you don't want to see empty storefronts. That is not good.
Molly, the city council would need four more votes to override Mayor Johnson's potential veto. Do you think that that's possible? So far, this group hasn't been able to muster a veto-proof majority. What happens next, though, if that is the outcome?
Well, what I would like to point out to any alderperson that might be listening right now as we go into an election year next year, while the Sam Toyas and the Kevin Boehms and the Donnie Medeas might have the funds and resources to pull your ear, they might be able to make those donations to those alder people who voted for the pause. Your largest voting bloc in this sector are workers. The workers who are going to be looking at you, who voted for them to have a pay cut and the worst affordability crisis that we have seen, at least in my lifetime. And that's what I want them to remember. Next year, workers will remember. We will make sure of it, because this is, quite frankly, life or death. It's the difference between affording medicine and not. And it's also, as I mentioned before, about worker safety. If over 70% of tipped workers, women workers, Black and Brown women workers, are experiencing sexual harassment on the job because they have to endure it to be able to pay their bills, this is a women's safety issue and a gender justice issue just as much as it is about making sure businesses stay afloat.
Sam, you know, Mayor Johnson, we're expecting his veto on this. What is next for the Illinois Restaurant Association then?
No, again, our job is just to, you know, work with alders throughout our 77 communities. They all want to, you know, bring business into their communities. And again, by law, no one can make less than the minimum wage. And if there's bad actors and actresses out there, let's go after them. Let's take their license away. And you cannot operate if your license has been not renewed. You're breaking the law there too. So I heard that there was people that did not renew their license. I will make sure BACP knows that, because you cannot operate if you're not have your license up to par, just like you cannot operate if you're not making sure your servers are making the minimum wage. By law, no one can make less than the minimum wage, and by law, no one can operate without an up-to-date license.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Let's turn now to the top news stories of the day with WBEZ Morning Edition anchor Claire Lane, WBEZ reporter and weekend anchor Michael Puente, and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller. The beautiful weather this weekend came and went. Here's Claire Lane with the details.
I think most of us would really like some consistency at this point. But yes, we had a beautiful day, a Friday, beautiful day Saturday, and now we're back in our coats and our scarves. But we are going to have some warmth later this week. National Weather Service is telling us that the temps are slowly going to climb, so 40s to 50s tomorrow. At Wednesday, we could see 64. Okay. And by Thursday, we could be back in the 70s. But then, of course, the ebb and flow will continue, and next week we're going to be back in the 30s.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at the point where I'm like, I don't care if it's fake spring, real spring, as long as it's like, you know, right, above 50, I'm good with that.
If you can get some sunshine, that's good for everyone.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, to some hard news. Violet, President Trump said he was going to deploy ICE agents to stressed airports starting today. Remind us how we got here.
Yeah, so this is part of a 5-week ongoing battle for DHS funding where, you know, the government's been in a partial shutdown for DHS specifically as Democrats, you know, fight for more restrictions or rather safeguards on federal immigration agents after they killed, you know, many people last year, as well as, you know, obviously blitzed the nation across many cities. But as part of this, you know, other parts of DHS have, you know, gone without funding, including the paychecks for TSA agents who have will be missing their second paycheck in a row this upcoming Friday. But this is also part of a bigger union fight. You know, the Trump administration tried to cancel the collective bargaining agreement of the TSA union twice last year with former Secretary Kristi Noem saying that, you know, because they have a primary function of national security, they shouldn't be collectively bargaining or engaging in union activity. Mm. And the workers see this as part of that.
Okay, so agents are at airports today? O'Hare, Midway, are they there?
I haven't heard anything about our local airports, but we have heard that, you know, down in Atlanta, there are some in the security lines. And, you know, Tom Homan, the border czar, appointed to head this by President Trump, it seemed like he was learning with us. It doesn't really seem like there's a solid plan on this yet. Yesterday, he said that there would be a plan solidified for today. So we don't have specifics, but, you know, obviously a lot of those TSA union workers talking about, you know, there's a training gap. These folks shouldn't be doing the same thing. And Homan said they won't be on the X-ray machines, but they'll be guarding lines, potentially checking IDs. Again, just seeming like he was kind of tossing ideas out there.
Okay, so a lot of details to still
be solidified. And more conflicting information, right? We're hearing from local officials, these people don't have trainings on some of these machines. Federal officials are telling us that they do, so it's a wait-and-see game.
A lot of messiness here because there's technical skills that I imagine you have to have as a TSA agent. There's also the union rights to working at airports here. And Violet, you caught up with the president of Chicago's TSA union, Daryl English, and we have some tape. Here's what he had to say about the burden for TSA agents.
Not only have they not been paid and their collective bargaining rights have been challenged, but now they're having to worry about some other individuals that may be coming in and either assisting or replacing. I'm not for sure how exactly how that would even work. All these officers want to do is to do their job and get paid. If that is done, there won't be no need for any kind of outside assistance.
So it sounds like there's this concern that this further burdens TSA agents because now they have to operate around and deal with ICE agents who aren't trained in their jobs. Is that right?
Yeah. Daryl told me yesterday, you know, when we spoke, there's 7 months of training that goes into, you know, being a TSA agent at the airport. which includes months of working on the job with supervision before you're allowed to screen solo. So they're saying that, you know, the Trump administration is saying that this is to make the lines speedier at airports, which if you've been on social media, you might have seen are getting pretty long as, you know, the TSA agents are calling out. But, you know, there's the union members are saying this is actually going to slow things down.
Is anyone flying soon this week at all?
Girl, no.
I still don't have my real ID, so.
Okay. Violet.
I'm a little late on that.
I still want to go to Vegas every weekend, so you never know.
Well, and it's flying right now is so expensive with the war and the price of jet fuel has gone up. Yep. I mean, even looking at flights between hub to hub, Chicago to Denver, for example, is 4 or 5 times of what it would normally be with or without
Sprinter. A lot of factors here. Let's shift gears a little bit. Mike, a Pilsen mural of workers' rights activist Cesar Chavez has been painted over. Catch us up on what happened.
That's right. On Friday, a mural at Barrett Park called La Libertad, which means freedom. It has several murals of individuals, Malcolm X, Frida Kahlo, Gandhi, and Cesar Chavez was on there. And on Friday, it was painted over. Because there's a controversy over the late civil rights and labor leader icon.
Yes, and tell us a little bit more about that. This is someone who has meant a lot to a lot of people, revered by the Latino community and labor organizers alike. So what's been the fallout of these bombshell revelations that have come out?
Yeah, it's such an understatement. This Cesar Chavez is so ingrained into the Latino community and the just Latinos in general. This is a man who was part of the labor rights movement for farm workers. And you might wonder, like, why is he so revered in Chicago? There's no farms around here, but not close by. It was also labor rights, Latino rights back in the 60s, 70s. But now an investigation by the New York Times that came out last week showed that he allegedly was abusing young girls and women during his time, during this entire movement, including his pretty much second in command, Dolores Huerta, who came out and says, you know, he assaulted her and she had 2 babies with him. And so now there's an outcry to remove. There's so many things named after him, parks, bridges, schools. His name is everywhere. And now the process is to begin to cover up murals, get his name off of post offices and the like. It's not going to be an easy process. And, you know, the community's kind of in mourning over this.
You've
got this person who was revered so much and now to be ripped down. Still a lot of fallout.
Violet, a look at international news. We've been watching developments in the Middle East. Over the weekend, Israel ordered the further demolition of homes in Lebanon, even though more than 1 million people there have already been displaced in this recent iteration of Israeli attacks. Violet, you checked with the Lebanese Americans living in Chicago. Who did you talk to? What did they have to say?
Yeah, so just a quick geography lesson for anybody that's not in the loop on this. Lebanon is on Israel's northern border. They border each other there. And so it's been the source of many conflicts for decades, right? And so some of the Lebanese Americans that I'm talking to in the Chicago area have been, you know, born amid this conflict. You know, one gentleman was born in the El Tibnin Hospital as it was, you know, bombed amid the 2006 July War, which was another conflict between Hezbollah and Israel, just like this one. But you're right. You know, 1 million people have already been displaced in the country, about 20% of the population in Lebanon. And this comes just a year after, you know, they were displaced amid a prior conflict. Israeli strikes have continued in Lebanon through the ceasefire since then. And so, you know, we've seen the death toll rising. I believe now for this current iteration of the conflict, more than 1,200 have been killed in Lebanon.
And what have people you've spoken to said about their family members in Lebanon and watching this ongoing war?
Yeah, well, luckily, a lot of the folks I spoke to, their families have been, you know, safe. They've been spared from these rocket strikes so far. But, you know, obviously it digs at a lot of these old feelings. You know, they mention, again, having lived through these conflicts before. One of them told me about watching the pager bombs go off 2 years ago. And so, it brings up a lot of these old feelings, but it's also, they're worried about how this reflects at home. You know, there could be an increase in Islamophobia and anti-Arab mm-hmm. sentiment that, followed 9/11 and in the decades since. And so they're leaning into culture. Some are, playing music and trying to represent the artists from Lebanon that, inspire them and ground them in their culture.
Do you have a handle on how big the Lebanese community is in Chicago or Illinois?
Yeah, so the 2030 census will actually be the first one that tracks, any sort of minutiae in the Arab population. Okay. This was after years of rallying for this to be included. Some of the year-to-year smaller census tracks, kind of give us a little bit of a picture, but the Arab American Institute does their own estimates, which put the Lebanese population in Chicago at about 15,000.
Okay.
But Illinois has the sixth largest Arab population of the U.S. states.
Okay. Claire, turning to you, Chicago's CTA, the Chicago Transit Authority, has filed a federal lawsuit against the Trump administration. What's going on there?
CTA is suing the Trump administration to claw back billions of dollars in federal funding that the White House actually froze the first time the government was shut down. This was back in October. This is all part of the sort of the DEI measures that the Trump administration was taking. So the lawsuit is arguing that the Trump administration acted arbitrarily in halting this transit construction money, and we want that money back. We're saying if we don't get it, we're going to have to halt projects, the CTA Purple Line and the CTA Red Line expansion project.
Okay. And Claire, what else are you watching today?
Yeah, our old friend, former Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, he's been, all over the news as of late, but now he's proposing a pretty far-reaching measure to crack down on some of these betting we've been seeing in predictive markets in Washington, political betting. But his proposal, part of an effort to call attention to what he's saying is a culture of corruption that's really sort of gripping the country's politics and would apply to leaders and employees of all levels of the federal government.
Okay. Thanks for the update, Claire. Mike, I want to turn to you. A former Chicago Bulls legend is headed to the Hall of Fame, but not for basketball. Fill us in. Who is going where here?
Dennis Rodman, the Worm, the legend from both the Detroit Pistons and Chicago Bulls. Was on three straight NBA championships with the Bulls. Yeah, he's headed to the World Wrestling Entertainment Hall of Fame. Rodman, this is a guy, we couldn't even fathom this now, but during the 1998 NBA Finals, he skipped a practice to head to a televised wrestling match where he was paired with Hulk Hogan. So WWE has a Celebrity Hall of Fame that includes Mike Tyson, Pete Rose, and even former Chicago Bulls great William the Refrigerator Perry. So he's heading into the WWE Hall of Fame. But there is an argument that he should be in the NBA Hall of Fame because what he meant to basketball, there'll never be another rebounder like him. So congratulations to the Worm, Dennis Rodman.
And that Hall of Fame ceremony will be held in Las Vegas during
WrestleMania weekend.
Okay. All right. Something to watch for. Violet, any other stories you're watching as we head into the week?
Yeah. I mean, I have been covering the assessor's race because it is my job. But, obviously staying on top of this, a lot of folks, invested because property taxes have been on the rise. So I did a story over the weekend with Alden Laurie at WBEZ where we broke down the data of property tax raises, those bills skyrocketing versus how incumbent Fritz Kagi fared.
Okay.
And it's fair to say that, people's bills were affecting the way they voted.
I imagine so.
Yeah.
Property taxes, number one topic for many voters.
Oh my gosh, yeah, affordability especially. But I did want to shout out Alden as well as you for both accepting the Chicago Headline Club Watchdog Award
thanks,
over
Violet.
The weekend. So congratulations to you both.
And congratulations to you as well. I'm pretty sure you hadn't handled a lot of reporting on that topic. We won for coverage of ICE in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much to you both. Mike, any other stories you're watching this week?
Well, I'm still interested. Congratulations to the Illinois men and women's basketball team. They're advancing in the NCAA tournament, both the men and women's side. On the men's side, Purdue, Michigan, Iowa. So the Big Ten is well represented. One big story I gotta send a shout out to my area, Northwest Indiana. Finally, after years in the planning, the South Shore train is finally gonna start using its 8-mile new extension called the Monon Trail. This is billions of dollars into planning. There's a lot of excitement in Northwest Indiana over there. They're going to start on March 31st.
Okay. That's WBEZ's Claire Lane and Michael Puente and Chicago Sun-Times' Violet Miller. Thanks to you all.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Brooke Miller. It was edited by Ethan Schwab. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.